Hello everyone, welcome back to Just Another F1 Podcast here on the Apex Motorsport. My name is Richard Smith and this is episode 2 of season 3 and we've just had our very first race of the season. And joining me today to discuss it all is of course Ryan. Ryan, welcome back to the podcast. We just had the Bahrain Grand Prix, as I said, it was the season opener. Now describe it in 3 words for me.
Ooh. Okay. Overtakes, problems, and Haas.
Okay, yeah, that's a very good 3-word race review, summarized pretty much the whole race, but I'm going to start off by talking about the big talking point from the race, and that is the reliability of the Red Bulls. The Red Bull were seen going into the race as one of the two favourites, potentially for the championship, alongside Ferrari. And Red Bull looked to have a very good race, Verstappen and Perez both fighting up at the front of the grid. But then as the race went on, both drivers suffered difficulties and both ended up retiring from the race. I think it's the first time there's been a double DNF from Red Bull since Austria 2018. I think that was the last time. But Ryan, how big of an impact already do you think Red Bull's both not scoring is going to have on this year's championship?
I don't think it's going to have too much of an impact. Obviously, we're going into this new season. Well, we're already in it. But I feel that there's going to be a few more than just Red Bull having hiccups at the start of the season. Yes, we've had one race. Ferrari seemed to be on top of things. The Ferrari-powered cars, or the consumers, or the customer vehicles, or whatever you want to call them, they seem to be on top of things. I think with the Ferrari's power units, you know, probably more adapted well, or they've spent more time improving on that. I do feel that maybe a couple more teams are going to have hiccups. Obviously, we see with Mercedes, they're not exactly the running the most as they want to be, I suppose I could say. But losing the points early on, I don't think it's going to have that big of an impact, because I do think, obviously, other teams are going to struggle in certain other areas as we go around different tracks. Obviously, this first track might suit Ferrari a lot better. And we could go then, obviously, to the, and I'll not call what Will calls it, but the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, and we could have a completely different race there. Obviously, it's tighter. We've seen last year it was carnage. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But I don't think this first points deficit they're going to suffer majorly from. I just think it's a wee minor setback.
And one of the reasons it's been put down to that both drivers failed to finish was apparent issue with a fuel pump, and that the cars were starved of fuel at the end of the race. And Brian, just about these fuel pumps, do you think that was the issue, or do you think there was something else going on here with the Red Bull powertrains?
From what I understand, these fuel pumps are sort of supplied or regulated through the FIA. So all the teams have these fuel pumps. Now there was, so I seen a tweet on Twitter, and it apparently was posted about 45 minutes before the race that there had been an investigation into these pumps. A few teams had made a few speculations or a few inquiries about them, because there was possible problems that they were cracking and then causing fuel to leak into the electronics, which was a defect they were sort of suspecting. Red Bull had replaced both their fuel pumps before the race, so whether the replacement had something to do with it, or who knows what, but the fact that they've said that they were starved of fuel makes you think, well, if they have a requirement that they have to finish with so much fuel in the tank, is the tank and the pump not sitting at the bottom of the tank, or is the pump raised itself off the ground a little? Obviously, the porpoising, maybe it's not completely fixed, or maybe it's just sort of hovering in the fuel tank. I don't know what way it's obviously fitted, so maybe it was lifted up a bit and didn't catch all the fuel. It's hard to say what exactly went on. Maybe it's just the fact that this new fuel, the E10 fuel, where it's 10% ethanol and the rest of it's race fuel or just normal fuel, I suppose, whether it had a factor to play in this as well. But it's one of those ones where it's early days. Nobody actually really knows too much about it, because it's a listed FIA part. So we'll just have to see what comes through with it as we go into the next race to see what really comes out of it.
The one thing that Red Bull have said that it's nothing to do with this standard part that all teams use, at least they're saying that themselves, we don't know that for sure. But if it is something that we see in Saudi Arabia and Australia and even in Imola, that's going to be a concern that a lot of these teams will be thinking potentially there could be cases against the FIA for, you know, losing points and maybe wins, and that's, you know, a drop of the place in the Constructors' Championship is worth millions to these teams. And, you know, we have to speak of the reality here. It is only the first race of the season. There's 22 more races to go, and that dropping points in one race might not be the biggest thing to happen this season for that team. They may drop points in multiple races, but from the team's point of view, they will see this as an opportunity to try and argue their case that if a part that is supplied to them fails and is something that's widespread, they're at a disadvantage. But then again, everyone has the same parts and there's the same risk. So it is going to be a difficult one. It'll be interesting to see, should this happen in future races, if any teams will sort of start taking it further, and will we potentially see this looked at and potentially changed to a different part. We just have to wait to see on that one. But up until that point, Red Bull looked like they were going to have a very good weekend. They had a very strong car. But there's one team that outshined them, and that was Ferrari. And it's so good to see the Italian team, the historic team, back at the very front of the grid, fighting for wins. And it is only the first race of the season, but they look genuine title contenders this year. One man in particular was mighty impressive, and that was Charles Leclerc. Ryan, just talk to me about Charles Leclerc's weekend, his race, and just how dominant he was.
Yeah, we sort of seen over the weekend that he was putting in some solid times in practice, and we were like, well, that's just practice, you can't read too much into it. Maybe they were just doing a low fuel run, and other teams were just doing a medium fuel run, and we didn't actually expect these Ferrari powered cars overall to be fast. But obviously we've seen Charles, he gave it everything in that qualifying session and managed to pip Verstappen to pole position. He finished there too. He managed to drag out Verstappen, but I feel that they had such a strong edge even over Verstappen throughout that race. Even, you know, Carlos at one point was starting to gain on Max, obviously further afield because he had Perez battling him, but he was still gaining time towards the end before obviously the safety car and stuff bunched everyone back up. But it was kind of interesting to see how well Charles sort of fought that car, not so much fought it, but understood the car so well in the first race of the season, knowing his limits. And we didn't really see any mistakes from Charles that whole race. We see mistakes from quite a lot of drivers, either locking up a turn one or, you know, getting maybe a corner slightly out wrong, going maybe too hard into it, or just not putting the power down quick enough. We didn't really see that with Charles. Charles just seemed to be consistent lap in, lap out throughout that whole race. So it was a well-deserved win. I will give him that. You know, he's of quality. And I like that stat that he's the first Monegas driver to ever lead a world championship. That's kind of got a nice ring to it.
Yeah, it definitely does. Especially with Monaco being so historic in Formula 1. Yes, it is a very small principality, but for the motorsport world, it's probably the most historic place out there. So it is nice for him, and in a Ferrari as well, that will mean a lot to him. And it's the ideal combination for the motorsport world, the driver of one of the most popular countries for racing, and the team that's one of the most popular out there. So it is great to see. But he, as you said, he adapted quite quickly to the new 2022 cars. But his teammate Carlos Sainz struggled during the weekend. And although he finished P2 in the race, he admitted himself that he was still quite off the pace over the weekend. And he knows himself what he has to do to improve. He just has to adapt to this car. And he said he's going to put in the work to do this. But Ryan, do you think Carlos Sainz had a good weekend and has done exactly what the team was looking for from him?
Yeah, overall, I think, you know, P3 is a solid performance. No, sorry,
we finished P2,
yeah. P2 was the 1-2 finish. I got confused. Yeah. I forgot that things happened at the the last lap. P1-2 finish. Ferrari signs right up there, doing what the second, well, not the second driver, but the driver who was behind the first driver. So at the minute he's the second driver. We seen last year that sort of flipped. So I think he just needs a bit more time, and then we could see a real scary dominant force in Ferrari this year. It's going to be quite scary. I think Carlos, you know, we've seen how quick he was to adapt last year, you know, his first season in the Ferrari, and he managed to take the reins over Charles. So we could see that happening again. Just at what point we do. I don't know. Carlos, great racer. Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, Sainz last season beat Leclerc in the driver standings, which is something that for him he should be quite proud of, because Leclerc is seen by Ferrari as their future world champion. So for him to come into the team and do so well in his first season really left Ferrari with two number one drivers. So the battle to see number two, and I know Leclerc will not want to settle for number two. So if there's a competitive battle between the two, they're pushing each other along, but remain respectful of each other. He said this could be a very, very good dominant pairing for Ferrari. But take a look now at Mercedes, and they struggled this weekend. They were, I think, nearly half a second off the pace and around this, in the race and in qualifying. They did not look strong whatsoever, and the fact that they were overly delighted with a P3 and P4 finish in a Mercedes that have went and won, is it 8 Constructors' Championships in a row, or 7 or 8, for them to be happy just to finish 3rd and 4th is, so it shows how much they've been struggling. And Ryan, do you think that given their struggles it's going to take a few races this season for them to catch up, or do you think by that stage Ferrari and Red Bull will, they'll be developing and they'll already be the next step ahead, and this could be a very, when we say a bad season for Mercedes, anything below winning the title for Mercedes is going to be difficult?
Yeah, well, it was quite unusual to see how happy Toto Wolff was that they finished 3rd and 4th. Like, I know they're a team that, you know, pride themselves at being at the forefront of all the, you know, engineering sides of the, whether that's aero or engine performance or just getting things right on the day. It was more luck than anything that they were sitting in a position where, you know, the Red Bulls having their failures allowed them to get onto the podium places and then fourth with George Russell. I think it was more luck. Now, I do think Mercedes will pull it back a bit. Obviously, I went back and watched a prediction video, our predictions video, not our podcast from last week and what we predicted, but like our actual predictions video. And I said that Lewis Hamilton would be hungry and he would be possibly winning the world championship by the end of the season, because he wants to probably leave on a high if he is to leave at the end of the season. But, you know, it's not at the minute, that's not looking very likely with Ferrari and the Red Bull power trains seeming to have probably the faster engines. Definitely Ferrari seemed to be on top of it all. I remember whenever we were talking about it and qualifying, I don't think I brought it up at the time, but it was in the back of my head that Ferrari spent a lot of time developing their engine with Shell, because obviously Shell's their fuel partner.
Yep.
And with this new E10 fuel, the 10% ethanol, they were working hard with Shell to find the ways of maximizing, you know, the potential gains from this fuel and how they could adapt their fuel to suit their engine and how they can adapt their engine to suit the fuel better, so they meet in the middle and have a perfect combination. And to be honest, I think they've probably done the best out of all the teams, because we've seen how fast they are. Obviously, the straight line speed's not just as great as what Red Bull would have, but we've seen that with Mercedes versus Red Bull. Mercedes always had the straight line speed, and Red Bull really didn't. They were fast in the corners. And now we've seen that role sort of swap for Red Bull and Ferrari. It's going to be an interesting season. That's the sort of the way I'm sitting at it.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll talk about another team quickly. Haas, incredible. That's the only word I can really describe. Given that they were so bad last year. They had a car that they didn't even develop. It was whatever they hadn't tested, and went to Bahrain and went all the way to Abu Dhabi. There was a few developments, but not that much, nothing significant enough. Obviously, we know they have had their struggles in testing, you know, losing their title spot, not losing, they ripped up the contract with their title sponsors, and they got rid of Nikita Mazepin and replaced him with Kevin Magnussen, who I think the majority of people were delighted to see back. I think he was sort of kicked out of his seat a bit unfairly, and he's come back, finished fifth. He went into Q3. It was the first time Haas got into Q3, I think, in a couple of seasons.
Since 2018, was it?
I'm not sure it was that far back, but it's definitely two seasons. It might have been 2019 was the final time. I think it was with Magnussen as well. But for fifth place finish in the Haas, the team that finished bottom of the Constructors' Championship last year, is just incredible. But one thing it does show is if you are willing to sacrifice an entire season where you don't develop a car, suffer the pain and finish last, the following season you could be right up, almost leading the midfield battle. They pretty much are. So yeah, that's incredible for them. But Ryan, just what do you think of Haas, and how glad are you to see them being competitive this year given their struggles last year?
Yeah, I think they put the best of the investment from last season into this season, and it's a good thing they invested then and not now, because now would be a lot too late and they wouldn't have had the money. Definitely, I'm kind of glad for Haas. It's weird because we've went from like sort of laughing at Haas and sort of half hating Haas to just in love with it. It's crazy what 3 weeks can do to a team. I don't think had they have kept their other driver, even though he could have raced under special circumstances, I don't think we would have seen a result like this. Definitely not.
No.
I think we would have been looking at P11 and 12 at the best case scenario, I'd say. Definitely not 5th and 11th. So gutted for Mick, though. It was just outside the points, and he was inside the points the whole time until the safety car in the last lap. And as well, he got spun round too, you know, by Esteban Ocon in the first lap, which we can't forget. Oh, wonderful 360, by the way.
Yeah, whether that was luck or skill,
I don't know how he did that. Yeah. But Haas seemed to be on form. It's obviously got to do as well with that Ferrari engine, as we've seen Alfa Romeo have jumped up the grid as well as the Haas. Haas went from the slowest to, I suppose, technically at this very moment in time, they are the third fastest team because they're third in the Constructors' Championship.
Yeah. But which is madness.
I can see them possibly finishing sixth. I don't think they're going to have it in them to finish that high up. But hey, I could be wrong. We don't know what's going to happen. K-Mag could pull out some more Viking comebacks, as Gunther said. Obviously, he used a few more words than I did. But no, it was great to see Haas back somewhere close to the top of the midfield. Yeah, it's wonderful.
So the next team we're going to look at is Alfa Romeo, who had a really good weekend. Valtteri Bottas and Zhou Guanyu Zhou, I haven't quite decided what we should be calling them. I think it's Zhou Guanyu is what many are running with, but he had a very good debut performance in Formula 1, scoring points, and there was a lot of criticism of him coming in to the series as a pay driver. And yes, he is, but he really put on a very good performance and sort of credited his way into the sport and looked like he deserved a place in the Formula 1 grid based on that first performance. But then again, we did see the same with Yuki Tsunoda when he come in, so it'd be interesting to see what happens with Zhou. But Ryan, what did you make of Alfa Romeo's weekend, and especially the incredible performance of Valtteri Bottas and Guanyu Zhou?
Yeah, Bottas' performance over the weekend was quite good, actually. We've seen he qualified 7th.
Because he was alongside Hamilton in sixth.
Because Georgie Boy was ninth and Hamilton was sixth. Yes, that's correct. Apparently, I think he lost like nearly, what, six, seven positions in the first lap.
Yeah.
Really bad start. And he clawed them all back with good strategy and good race pace, which has been missing from Valtteri for the last while. You know, race pace wasn't exactly his best strength. He did get stuck behind Yuki Tsunoda in the race, which he got stuck behind quite a lot in the Mercedes, so which points out how much he struggled at Mercedes for race pace. But yeah, good performance from Valtteri. Zhou Guanyu, which I think apparently he prefers, because I think I can't remember if it was Ted Kravitz or David Croft, one of the two, was chatting to him and says, which way do you prefer it? And he just says, my friends call me Zhou Guanyu, so that's pretty much, I think, what most people go with. Yeah, but Guanyu Zhou just rolls off the tongue a bit better.
Yeah.
I seen the stat on Sky F1. He is the 66th F1 rookie to score points on his debut. Congratulations to him. Solid performance for him. Even as a paid driver, in quotation marks, you'll see it on the screen, not if you're listening to the podcast. But he performed probably the best we've seen out of a paid driver, take away Lance Stroll, we take away Nicholas Latifi. I'm not calling them paid drivers, but they technically are. A lot of drivers are actually paid drivers, if you think about it, but I'm not getting into that rabbit hole. Joe had a great performance. I was about to mess that up there.
P10.
Yeah, P10. He just nicked the point. So, solid points for Alfa Romeo.
Yeah, it's a very impressive weekend for them, and it's great to see them actually up there fighting again in the midfield. And Bottas' performance nearly makes you think that he was alongside a driver who was simply incredible, Lewis Hamilton, and that, you know, his performance for Mercedes was actually not too bad. It's just Hamilton was a lot better, and, you know, he is a 7-time world champion for that reason. But Ryan, we also seen helmet cams being used for the first time in sort of a widespread means, in terms of it was a part of the coverage for the entire weekend. And what an addition. Them helmet cams are fantastic. I love them. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, they look great, seeing the driver's perspective. Obviously, it's to the sort of the right-hand side of it. I think they were only on two drivers, which was Charles Leclerc and Zhou Guanyu. I'm pretty sure I didn't see them on anyone else.
So, yeah.
But just to have that perspective, obviously you don't really see much because you were sort of blinded by the glare and also the big bright lights, but and the halo and the winglets, so drivers really don't see that much when you start looking at the helmet cam. But it's good to see in the race if, you know, there's actually a bit of action going on, see how close they really are and what they can see at wheel-to-wheel racing. I like them. I just think maybe not in a night race. Day races probably a lot better to look at because it's a lot clearer to see, but night races maybe not so much with the glare.
Yeah, but it definitely gives you a feel for what the drivers are like, and it makes, you know, me think, yeah, I could definitely not do that. It looks very challenging, although we love the opportunity to drive an F1 car. If any teams want to give me that opportunity, please do. Be a great video, and I'm sure, Ryan, you can come along as well. you probably would. Over the weekend, we've seen the FIA report as well. It's something that we've talked about loads in the past, about the whole incident. And in fact, if you're listening to this podcast or watching it today, it is uploaded, it will be 101 days since the incident, which is pretty cool. It doesn't feel like it's been that long, but it has been. But we'll not go into the report because there's too much to break down in a short space of time. But basically, they said that it was human error. They didn't name the individual that was at human error, but we can assume it was Michael Massey because he was the race director for the day. But they said he acted in good faith. He put his own interpretation onto the rules, which have now been changed. The infamous any cars have been changed to all cars, which we've seen this weekend with all the lap cars on lap themselves. And we also know that, well, we've also heard that Carlos Sainz has almost reached an agreement for a new contract with Ferrari, so his performance the weekend is deserving of a new contract, and the team are going to give him that. But we'll talk about that more once it's confirmed. And I think it's a little bit, well, I think we should go on to our predictions now, Ryan. And we both started off relatively bad, 1 point each. I got a point for saying Bottas was going to finish in the top seven. During practice and qualifying, I was quite confident that would happen. But in the race, when I dropped his position, I was a little bit gutted that I wasn't going to get there. But he eventually did, albeit a help of a couple of cars ahead deciding they didn't want to finish the race. I got the point for Bottas, top seven, which was my wildcard prediction. But Ryan, your point come from Carlos Sainz finishing second, again helped by the two Red Bull cars retiring. But I'm sure you're quite happy with getting the point for Sainz. So we're 1-1 in the championship so far. Our predictions then for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix, which at the moment is still going ahead. I have seen a few reports that it may potentially not be. F1 are currently monitoring the situation. I think there's some sort of attack close to the circuit or involving, I think, an Aramco plant. I don't know the details for definite, haven't done too much research into that, but well, basically the race is going ahead until we hear otherwise. So Ryan, your pole position setter for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix?
Just based off of what happened last year, I think the person who's got, in the words of Carlos Sainz, the biggest cojones to really go for it is Max Verstappen. So he was really close, obviously he crashed out. He wasn't feeling too well that day, and I reckon he's probably going to be feeling a lot better come next week, unless all of a sudden he gets another cold or something. I think it's going to go Max Verstappen.
Okay, I'm going to go for Charles Leclerc, because I think that Ferrari car is just incredible, and I think they'll be good in Saudi Arabia as well. So Ryan, who do you think is going to win the race?
You see, this can go a million ways, because we do not know. We've seen how much carnage there was last year at this track. Honestly, anyone could win it. It wouldn't surprise me if a midfield car like Bottas wins it.
But it'd be nice.
I think that the front runners will be able to get away sort of half strong enough. So that'll probably be the two Ferraris, the two Red Bulls. I think we could be looking at another Ferrari win, but I do think it's too narrow to sort of get past anywhere really that well. But I still think it's going to go Ferrari, as much as I think Max might hold on to it. I'm probably going to regret this. I said this in the last one, and I did regret it. But I'm going to regret this one again if it happens. But I think it might go to your pole sitter. I think it's going to be a second win for Charles Leclerc.
Okay. I've gone for Carlos Sainz, so I'm also going in the Ferrari boat. So if Ferrari wins, one of us will be getting the point there. But who, Ryan, will be joining Leclerc on your podium?
Well, if Leclerc's on the podium, there's going to be Max. And I don't think we're going to see a supporting act. I don't think we're going to see a supporting Red Bull or Ferrari. I think we're going to see something spectacular happen, and we're either going to see a Haas, an Alfa Romeo, or an Alpine up there, just by the luck of the draw that we're going to see some smashes going on in this race. As much as it's going to hurt the teams, I think we're going to get to see some accidents like we did last year. Obviously, people are going to be a bit more cautious, but you can't prepare for an emergency stop in a Formula 1 car, because there's no ABS. And you'll just lock up, and you will just smash into people, especially at, 150 mile an hour. It's going to happen. The real question we should be asking for predictions is, how many safety cars or VSCs?
Yeah.
So, I never answered your question. So, I'm going to go with, Charles on pole. So, Charles to win, Max to come second, and I think we're going to see you know what? I'm just going to stick a Merc in there. I think we might actually see George Russell.
Okay. I mean, it's entirely possible after Hamilton's in the podium this weekend. And
just based off of the fact that there might be crashes and Mercedes might just be sort of in that midfield pack that might gain the advantage. That's what I'm going with.
Yeah, well, I'm going to go for Verstappen and Bottas because I'm thinking the same lines of you could see a surprise candidate. And I think Bottas, you know, Bottas is a very good driver, and I think we're going to see the best of him in Alfa Romeo. And I think it was late last season, Vettel got a surprise podium. I think this could be Bottas' turn. So, Ryan, podium, what do we do after podium? Fastest lap, isn't it? Fastest lap, yeah. I'm going to start this one, and I'm going to keep saying it until it actually does happen. Kevin Magnussen. I said it last week in more of a jokey fashion than what it should have been. But in reality, they have a very quick car, and it could be entirely possible. So, Ryan, who are you going for fastest lap?
Fastest lap. I think it's going to be race winner, Charles Leclerc. It's just there.
And we'll throw in your prediction of VSC safety cars. How many?
In total combined, I think we're going to see three.
Okay. I'm going to go for five.
Oh, you're optimistic. Yeah. Well, to be fair, well, we were close enough to it last season.
I mean, given we've seen the reliability of these cars so far, you know, it doesn't necessarily mean there's going to be a load of crashes, so...
Hold on, question, okay. What if it's a VSC and goes into a safety car? Does that count as safety car, or does that count as two?
We can debate that in the next podcast. Okay. It'll be very close. We've already started the pod of, let's discuss this at the end of the season.
These won't go towards our points, but this is just for fun.
Yes, this is a for bragging rights. Well, we'll throw in a random... Not for the competition bragging rights question every single week. We'll try to do that. Yeah. And if you have any suggestions, comment below. If you're listening to YouTube, or contact us on any social media, because we'd be interested to see what sort of predictions you want us to give. And also leave your predictions below as well to play along with us if you want. Brent, final prediction is, of course, the wild card one. And if we thought last week was going to be a wild-card prediction of absolutely nothing, this next week, or this race coming up, could also be just as dramatic. What do you think your wild-card prediction is going to be?
Wild-card, how wild can we go here? I'm going to say... I'm going to say Alex Albon in the points.
Okay.
Now that is very wild cardy.
Yep. I'm going to go for Haas and Alpha double points. So very possible. I have four drivers to keep an eye out. You've only got one. So it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But yeah, Ryan, I think we're going to bring this podcast to close here. Everyone listening, watching, whatever way you're getting this content, huge thank you for watching, listening to this one. If you missed last week's, it was the pre-season test and recap. Go back and listen to it if you want. And next one will be Saudi Arabia. Should it go ahead, we assume it will be. But yeah, thank you all so much for listening, Ryan. Thank you for joining me for this one. And we hope you join us in the next one for the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. Goodbye.